Exploring the importance of having the right skills to succeed, this is Skillfully Speaking, supported by Babcock International. Presented by Skills Ambassador Jackie Grubb.
Hello and welcome to Skillfully Speaking. You're probably expecting to hear the voice of Jackie Grubb, but fear not, Jackie is indeed still here in the studio for this episode, aren't you, Jackie?
I certainly am, Paul. Yeah.
Now, my name is Paul Philpott, and I'm delighted to take the role of interviewer here on this very special episode of Skillfully Speaking, where the subject of conversation is actually going to be Jackie Grubb herself. She's worked incredibly hard with regards to the skills agenda. She's a very good friend of myself and everyone here at the production team, hence why we decided to turn the tables on this episode. She's also a mentor to myself and many other people that we work with. Please put your hands together, so to speak, for Jackie Grubb. Hi, Jackie.
Thank you for your kind words. I feel very privileged to be here and very humbled with listening to you too.
Now, Skillfully Speaking, I just want to start with that. It's been a success.
It certainly has. And actually, when you approached me to do it in the first place, I reflected and was a bit unsure whether it was the right thing to do or not. But actually, a few episodes in and the feedback that we've had and the information and the tips and the wisdom that has come through and people have fed back to me, that it's actually changed people's lives and people have changed their way of doing things because of what they've listened to on the podcast.
Now, the really good thing about Skillfully Speaking as a series, and those who have heard other episodes will know that it gets under the hood of individuals, of entrepreneurs, and finds out how they've managed to overcome the skills challenges they've had personally. So what I'd like to do in this particular interview with yourself is actually put you under the spotlight, because I know you've had a remarkable journey yourself. Mm-hmm. You've learned so much. What first inspired you to pursue your current career, which is that in education?
Gosh, yeah. And that is a really, really good question. And right from an early age, I've always wanted to make a difference to people, even when I was an 8-year-old child, working with people, having fun and supporting people to be the best they possibly can. But I was thinking about this last night. The actual reason why I went into education was because when I was 16, I wanted to be a makeup artist for the BBC. That was my mm-hmm. whole thing. Before wanting to be a Blue Peter presenter when I was a few years younger, which you know about, yeah. And I've actually got a Blue Peter badge now, I went to college to study to be a makeup artist. Mm-hmm. And when I was there, and I say this with all due respect, I felt like that I needed to put myself into that position of a teacher so that the students would get a good experience and it would be a vehicle for them to have fruitful careers and fruitful lives. And actually, that's where it came from. I thought, I think I might be able to do a better job at this.
But your role now, I mean, you're a senior leader in the field of education. You are the CEO of your own educational establishment. And in the West Country, it's not a small organisation, let's put it that way. So has your inspiration evolved throughout your career as that role of being principal and CEO of an FE college?
Yeah, I never had aspirations to be a CEO or a principal or even a senior leader to a college or any organisation, really. It's just happened. So I wake up in the morning and think, how has this happened? I do get bored easily. I do like to have outcomes into everything that I do. So when I'm in a job and I feel that I've done enough that I can do, then I have to do the next thing. And it just so happens that I started off as a teacher with 2 hours a week working in a college, and I've just worked through every single level and I wake up and here I am.
I'm pleased you wake up in the morning thinking, how has this happened? Not why has this happened? Why me? It must be quite chuffed, actually.
Well, I have to give gratitude and thanks to my parents for bringing me into the world in the first place and allowing me to have a career of selfless service to help other people. And as long as I'm helping other people and making an impact, then I'm happy.
I'm pleased you mentioned your parents. We owe a lot to our parents. Yep. But I guess professionally, whilst your mum and dad and your family give you the personal encouragement, there are no doubt other leaders that perhaps you've admired or aspired to, or they've given you some form of influence on your own journey. Are you happy to share who those leaders might be, or indeed the backgrounds of those leaders?
Yeah, sticking on the theme of changing people's lives. And actually, I'm quite a disruptor underneath as well. So in a values-led way, I like disrupting things for the better. From a very early age, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and Brené Brown were a massive inspiration to me. And I am in awe of people that disrupt a system to make things better. And you don't get three people better than that, do you?
So being a disruptor in any organization, when you're either at the top or you're in the midway and you want to bring about change for the right reason, that's not the easiest thing to achieve. I guess when you do achieve it, you find that quite a rewarding thing. What would you say are the most rewarding aspects of your role as being a principal at an FE college?
Yeah, I try as much as I can to be always values led. And in terms of our college right now, we have been robust, rigorous, and relentless in terms of putting our values, our vision, our mission together. And that's been our platform of everything. So that's been our North Star, basically. But when you see people's faces light up, whether it's development, whether it's empowering them, whether it's giving them some sort of belonging, that's what makes my day.
The concept of values, a lot of organisations have values. Mm-hmm. They put it on the wall in reception, all that kind of thing. Do you think it's important for individuals to have values as well when they set out in a career and they mould their own journey?
Yeah, we all have our own reflections of our different values. And when we put the values together at City College Plymouth, it just wasn't a couple of people in one room putting them together. It was the students, it was parents, stakeholders, governors, staff. Everybody had a say. And actually, when we worked through this, we did have probably about 60 different values on a piece of paper. We were around a table looking at them and thinking which ones were right for how we wanted our organization to feel and look. But when we came up to respect, ownership, and integrity, all the other values that were on the table actually underpinned that. So it was really easy to choose those because those values are for stakeholders, staff, and students, and we use them every day. And the difference for our organisation is that it's live and in progress. We don't just have a document that we put on a shelf. It's something that we thread through the fabric of the whole organisation. And I'm really proud of that.
That's good to hear. Now, as Skillfully Speaking, you ask your guests about the skills they've had to develop and work on over the course of their career in order to further their career and achieve what they want to achieve. Where have you been challenged with regards to this? Because none of us are good at everything. We all have things that we have to overcome, fears, things we just don't know how to do. I was talking about hanging a door earlier and you say, I don't know how to hang a door either, but we're going to learn.
Yeah.
Could you share some examples of that?
Yes. So any advice that I give, if you get an opportunity to do something and it's within your values and boundaries, say yes. So I'm a person throughout my life, if I've been given an opportunity and it's values led, then I say yes. But on reflection of all of this, actually, Paul, I think a lot does stem from my childhood as well. And I expressed gratitude from my parents a few minutes ago. I grew up in a really posh village. Mm-hmm. And our family were the working class family that lived on the council estate in this posh village.
Ah, yeah.
And all of my friends had horses, had lovely houses. Mm-hmm. And when I reflect on that, I feel so gifted that I was brought up in an environment that they shared. I didn't go hungry. We went on holiday to Cornwall camping every year, and I had the most beautiful, beautiful childhood. And my childhood, for those that remember, was like Enid Blyton and the Famous Five. And those friends that I made at that early age are still my best friends now. And when I think of what I do now and sharing either the love or sharing what I've got, that actually has stemmed from my childhood because my friends shared with me and I shared with them. And we had the most amazing life outside. So my loves, if you like, are yoga, are swimming, are food. We might come on to that a little bit later, but being out in nature. Mm-hmm. And We used to leave the house in the morning and we'd be climbing hills. We would be making dens. We would be swimming in the local ponds. We would just be doing
everything.
Again,
going back
outside.
To being a troublemaker.
Yeah,
the
probably.
Famous five, we're never out of mischief.
Yeah, it was exactly like that. So that gave me the roots, really, of the person that I am today.
Yeah, I guess that kind of upbringing allows you to empathize with people from different backgrounds. And I guess also it perhaps removes a few fear aspects, because a lot of people have fears, don't they?
Yeah.
They're too scared to do something for myriad reasons, but they just have some kind of thing that gets in the way and they're not brave enough to say yes. When you're a kid and you're making dens, climbing trees, diving, you start to overcome fears at a very early age, don't you?
Yeah, I can remember one example. A few of my friends had horses. So again, this is the Jackie. We went riding on the horses and the horse just galloped off and there was a hill and I didn't know what was past that hill.
Oh, you were on the horse?
I was on the horse and thinking, oh my gosh, if there's a swift drop at the end of this hill, I'm doomed. But I held on for bare life and over the hill, and obviously it went flat. But I remember quite vividly thinking, oh my goodness, I've got on this horse, it's galloped off and I'm going over a hill. So perhaps I sort of busted the fear factor at a very early age.
Yeah, I could say, yeah, that's probably why you went into being a makeup artist to start off, because you definitely weren't going to be a horse rider, that's for sure. Yeah. And so lifelong learning and well-being, that's a theme that you bring into many of your podcasts, many of your interviews, and a lot of things that you do personally and professionally.
Yeah.
So why is lifelong learning so important for you as an individual? And why do you, I guess it's fair to say you consider yourself to be a good example, because the only way you can talk about these things is to lead by example.
Yeah.
So could you sum up why it's important, why you believe you are?
And I absolutely am a lifelong learner and recommend everybody to just keep on learning. Even just recently, I was on a recent trip of all walks of life. And my goodness, I'm so grateful of what I learned cognitively, spiritually, even in terms of wisdom to do with skills. Lifelong learning is important because nothing ever stays the same. And there are things, whether it's a qualification or whether it's something to do with not qualification based, what it does is it develops you into your full potential. Mm-hmm. And I think that probably stemmed from, I was a brownie and a guide in this beautiful village that I grew up in. I have got a competitive streak in me, which isn't as forceful as it was when I was younger. But in the brownies and guides, you earn badges. Mm-hmm. So whether it's a milk person's badge or a sewing badge or a blowing up tire badge or a bicycle badge, to receive something when you've worked towards it is a really empowering feeling.
I don't think having a competitive streak is a bad thing. I think some people will, you know, there'll be those who say, oh, you're way too competitive. And if you haven't got a certain amount of competitiveness in you, then you don't drive yourself. Do you know where I'm getting
at? Yeah, no,
I do.
I do. No, I absolutely agree. There's healthy competition. So there's a difference between healthy competition to trying to be the best all the time, because you can't be the best all the time and you need to share that as well. But healthy competition is good for everybody. I agree.
So with that in mind then, have there been any examples where you had to slow yourself down? Because in work, I do become obsessed with things sometimes. And I've been told by my partner and by friends, no, slow down.
Yeah.
You're doing too much.
Yeah.
Or you're taking that way too seriously. And I'm like, I have to. It's like where the competitiveness turns into obsession. How do you put your reins, kind of stop yourself from getting into that awful loop?
Yeah, that is actually a really good question. And I've just completed my 37th year in further education. So I've been working in education for 37 years.
For somebody who's 26, that's quite an achievement.
I know, it's amazing. Yeah. How did that happen? So not so much the competitive side of things, but because I've now had the privilege of 37 years of wisdom in the education sector, and also I have worked for Ofsted and I've worked for awarding bodies in terms of quality assurance, I feel quite humbled that I have got skills to share. And when I see something that isn't right, then something in my brain tells me that I've got to put it right as soon as possible. So in a way, COVID supported me, because when I first started 5 years ago at City College Plymouth, obviously you want it to be the best it possibly can. And organisational change and change is really difficult for lots of people. So COVID stopped me probably working so quickly in terms of trying to fix things, because timing and balance on things is really important. If you try to do things too quickly, it can have the reverse effect. So it's about timing and balance of doing the right thing at the right time.
Talking about balance, you've got a busy role, a busy job.
Yeah.
And many people do. I remember it's Liz Earle, I think, who, one of your guests previously, yeah, who really put a focus on this particular subject. It's about well-being. So how, yeah, do you prioritise your well-being whilst managing such a demanding role?
Yeah. Well-being is at the forefront of everything that we should do. And anybody that knows me will say that, Jackie will say that we are nothing without our health and well-being. And our priority at City College, we have guiding principles, and health and well-being is the top of the agenda with that. Why do I feel like that? Health and well-being, or wellness, has always been at the forefront of everything that I live and breathe. Mm-hmm. One, I'm really, really passionate about leading with example. But also in terms of some of my life happenings, there's been some learnings around that as well. So when one of my daughters was 13 months old, she contracted a high strain of meningitis, mm-hmm, one of the worst strains, called meningococcal septicemia. And during that time, we were taken in a room to say she probably wouldn't survive the night. And after that, she had to have a full blood transfusion and a plasma transfusion. And then we thought she might lose her arms and legs. Then we thought she might be deaf, mm-hmm, but she got through that. So going through that experience, one, created resilience, but also made you reflect on how life is so, so precious. So that was one of a big happening in my life. And also that same year, my mum, at the age of 52, died of cancer. So two big life happenings at the same time, that when you reflect, it does actually make you realise how precious life is.
Absolutely.
So there was a time in my life that I thought, oh my gosh, I'm only going to survive until I'm 52. And I'm 57 now. So that's why health and well-being and wellness has always been at the forefront of my agenda, that now I just thread through the fabric of everything that we do and I do.
Thank you for sharing that. You mentioned earlier that you go swimming.
Yes.
And we don't mean getting into a pool. You're one of the strange people that gets up at silly o'clock in the morning and you do the wild, is it wild swimming?
Yes.
You also mentioned yoga,
yes,
as well. A little birdie told me that actually yoga's your thing.
Yoga is my life.
Yoga
is my life.
So how much of yoga is your thing,
yeah,
in terms of your background there? And how does that help you manage your role and support your team's health as well?
My granddaughter thought my job was a yoga teacher for many years, because all she sees is us all doing yoga and talking about it and talking about the benefits and everything. So it's absolutely a family thing. But yes, yoga is my life, and meditation as well. So the things that really thread through my own life are, as you said, yoga, meditation, being out in nature, and wild swimming. And coupled with that, food. So I'm obsessed with food.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
Most sensible thing you've said all day. Yeah. The importance of food. But it's, yeah, diet though, isn't it? It's not just eating, or actually admitting, no, you are a bit of a foodie.
Yeah, I am a foodie, but a good foodie, yeah, as, yeah, well. I'm a feeder. And at the same time, I love cooking, and I love Ayurvedic cooking. And I'll get back to the yoga in a minute. But if you come to my house, you'll be fed. So that's an absolute guarantee.
There's an invite, everyone.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And if I'm part of a community, I always end up in the kitchen. In a recent trip to India, I visited a temple and I ended up in the kitchen rolling out chapatis, which was amazing. But going back to the yoga meditation, I do every day. I even do it subconsciously now while making a cup of tea or something like that. But where this all sort of started was about 15 years ago, I went on a yoga retreat in a beautiful place in Snowdonia in North Wales. And that really is where the journey started. And I've been visiting there ever since. And they are a global organization. Their mission actually is to transform the world by giving people the tools to transform themselves. And they've supported in transforming
me. That's actually quite a good mantra, that.
Yeah.
So are you a yoga instructor? You could actually go in front of a class of people and do a yoga class.
Yeah. And I do.
That's cool. That's all right.
Yeah.
And so you do?
I absolutely do. So one of my bucket lists was, and it was before I came to City College Plymouth, actually. It's been on my bucket list for a very long time, was to lead by example and give classes to the organisation, yoga classes. And it happens, and I do it. And in the summer, I even did a yoga class for the exec team, all of them. It was mandatory. And I've got the pictures and the evidence to show for it.
Wow.
Because yoga and meditation transforms your life. And that's why I'm sitting here looking the way that I am, hopefully.
If you want to build on your skills and get yourself on the right path to success, visit the City College Plymouth website, cityplym.ac.uk. You can hook up with courses, download information packs, guides, and much more. Or find us on social media. We're Skillfully Speak on X, Skillfully Speaking Podcast on Instagram, and Skillfully Speaking on Facebook and LinkedIn. Skillfully Speaking, where hidden skills are revealed. Now back to the conversation.
We mentioned earlier about the whole series Skillfully Speaking and how it came about. And I think it's fair to say there was probably a little bit of a frustration with regards to the overall skills agenda thing and, and the way that education works. And education isn't just restricted to schools and college and education. Education and skills are things that we need to learn and develop individually every single day of our lives, even if it's just a small amount. So the skills gap, can you tell us why that is such a frustration and so important?
Yeah, and it is. And before we even start, the word skills is oversimplified. We oversimplify it. So what I think skills is, what the Prime Minister thinks skills is, what, you know, a member of our staff might think skills is, could be totally different. So we complicate it. And I'm pretty passionate about skills should be at the top of the agenda of everything. And if I had my way, I would be feeding straight into the Prime Minister for skills, because at the moment there's always another Member of Parliament that feeds in, because it's so important. Whether it's educationally or whether it's in everybody's everyday work, skills is always there. And as we know, in particular in this country, there is a huge skills gap for lots of things. And we know that it's a national problem, but we also know it's a regional problem. And we work with all of our employers and stakeholders to ensure that we work with them with a demand-led curriculum so we bridge that skills gap.
Mm-hmm. And it's also personal skills as well, isn't it? There are gaps in skills at home. People don't cook anymore. Do you know what I mean? This subject of skills, which is why I love the series so much, is such a wide topic. Yeah. You can have any guest on and ask them, how have you improved your skills in X, Y, or Z? And it can be quite an empowering subject to talk about. The issue is people don't actually talk about it.
No. And also people's life experiences make a difference. And that's why I wanted to share a few of mine, because it's our life experiences and our mistakes that make us better at what we do. So we can be robust, rigorous and relentless in terms of the theory side of things.
Yeah.
But actually, it's all about people at the end of the day.
True.
And if we don't support and develop people to their full potential or empower people or feed people, then if they haven't got those, and I hate the word softer skills, but
we
need to come up with something better.
I have no idea what that means anyway. Well, I don't think anybody does.
Resilience, teamworking, communication, being kind, doing things for love. are really, really important, and being compassionate about things that we do.
And on that note, one answer isn't the answer for everyone.
No.
Everyone's different.
No.
With regards to all those aspects and what they need to learn and how they go about doing it. That's got to be one of the hardest things to figure out,
yeah.
Especially when you're in education as a career.
Yeah. The most challenging thing for me is, and, you know, I've already explained to you that I don't like putting things in boxes.
Mm.
Is that everybody is different. All our brains are different. Mm. So one size does not fit all. So we have to adapt. We have to be agile so that we can empower absolutely everybody, because people's understandings are different and your use of language is really important for that.
So the development of skills as a national topic of conversation or thing for the future, what are your hopes with regards to skills developments? And from the background of an education leader, what future roles do you think educational institutions should play in correcting this?
I'm pretty delighted at the moment, and I'm apolitical, but a few days ago, a new Skills England report came through, and I'm really pleased about that. And I'm excited to be able to be part of that and part of that working group to ensure that we have the right skills strategy, that we can improve the skills shortage going forward. So that's a really, really good sign. We're talking about it already. So we've got a new government and we're talking about skills. That makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of curriculum reforms and things that we need to do, it's not going to be an overnight fix. So we've all got to work together, whether it's government, business, employers, private investors, educational organisations, including workplace providers. It's about everybody having a voice so that we can make a better job of it going forward.
I guess one of the other challenges is the needs and requirements of the audience, of us all, actually. It's a moving target, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the skills needs for a country changes, the skills needs for every industry changes. It's never quiet, it's never settling. And also, I guess a lot of individuals are perhaps a bit fearful of the future with regards to how they address their skills and how their jobs currently lie with regards to AI.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I tried to not mention, is the AI thing. What are your thoughts there with regards to AI and how we should be feeling as individuals, but also the impact that that has on the skills agenda? I guess it hasn't really caught up yet with regards to AI.
Yeah. In terms of AI, there's just one mantra for me with that. If it makes our lives better, then that's great and we use it.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't make our lives better, then we need to reflect about that. But sort of broadening that question even more, the skills gap, the digital agenda, including AI, the only way that we are going to gain momentum with this is to go right back to primary school or even nursery school. So this is about the landscape changing,
yeah,
in the world, in the country. But actually, if we don't focus on those generations before us, it's not going to be a quick fix, and I don't think it's going to work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be a real focus even before primary school. The education, the awareness, and everybody collaborating to make a difference at a very, very early age. Because also we have intergenerational challenges. So if we don't focus on that generation, it's not going to seep through.
I want you to get your crystal ball out, because you said you're spiritual. The mystic in you. What's it going to look like in 20 years' time in terms of the skills landscape?
Well, I'm really excited. Yeah, that is a question.
Hopefully we'll all be retired and we won't need to worry about it anymore. But what do you think?
Well, the answer to that is that I'm never going to retire. So till the day that I go into my next life, I will be giving service and doing something in the world, I'm sure. So retirement isn't even on my agenda.
I can believe that, actually. Yeah. So 20 years on.
I'm really, really excited about the future, mm-hmm, really excited. And I want to be a catalyst of that change of the future as well. And the generation of people coming through know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the wisdom and those people who've been on this earth a little bit longer that need to guide and share their wisdom so that we can enable them to make this planet the planet that it needs to be, because this planet is so hungry for change and to just get it into that next generation. And that includes climate change as well.
Mm-hmm. So Skillfully Speaking as a podcast, just over a year ago, I don't think you'd hosted a podcast before, had you? I knew you wanted to be on Blue Peter. You probably had many auditions, but in terms of that. So what's it been like for you to add podcast host to your skills?
Yeah.
And have you learned things from it?
Oh, my goodness. So going back to your lifelong learning, this is part of my lifelong learning and my continuous professional development, isn't it? I mean, first of all, it's been an absolute hoot working with you.
Oh,
and
thank you.
Again, I appreciate you asking me in the first place, because I can remember you saying to me, hey, Jackie, you've got something. I think this could work. And then me looking at you thinking, yeah, Paul, right.
You're off your rocker.
Yeah, exactly. So we went with it, didn't we? And it goes back to what I was saying earlier, actually. If you get an opportunity, say yes. But the thing in my head was, how is this going to impact skills? What is the purpose behind this? And actually, I couldn't have wished for anything more. So one, it's been an absolute honour and privilege to do it. But also the guests that we've had on the podcast have been so eclectic, but have been so honest, haven't they?
Yes.
And also given so much that people have really enjoyed listening to it, but at the same time, they've adapted their lives in terms of the wisdom that they've been hearing on it.
But that's the point with regards to your guest list.
Yeah.
In that Skillfully Speaking isn't a podcast series for educators or about educating, it's about lifelong learning. And I used the phrase earlier, getting under the hood of your guests. That's what you do. How do you relax them and get them to talk about their lives? Because when you go back over previous episodes, they really have.
I know, and I think about that all the time. But there's a mantra for me, and also talking about the Drew lineage that I talked about and a toolkit to transform people's lives. Everything I do, I try to do with love, kindness and compassion. And even if it's a difficult conversation or may create conflict, I always try and put those skills within it. And I don't know. I talk to people and they just end up telling me the whole life story. It just seems to happen. So I have to take that seriously. And if we can work together to make a difference to this world, then that's a win-win situation.
I guess that's the privileged position of being an interviewer as a podcast host. And also remembering that you're not broadcasting. You're actually talking to three people, your guest and the listener. And that's probably why a lot of your interviews have been very personal and very insightful, and your guests really do open up.
Yeah.
So can you have a little think back in terms of any conversations that have stood out for you in particular and maybe have offered you certain new angles for perspective or inspiration, you know, those ones that have really resonated with you well?
Yeah. When we did the podcast for Dame Kelly Holmes, I was so empowered and inspired by her, because she had a whole life journey from what it was like when she was at school and how it felt in terms of how she was treated. So those skills to do with communication, resilience and teamwork came through. But what I really liked about her interview was that she talked about working in a sweet shop and the skills that you needed for that. Then she talked about becoming an Olympic gold champion and the skills and the feelings behind that. And then about her charity and actually having to be the chair of the board and being in the boardroom. And she was quite honest with me to say, I didn't know what to do. So it goes back to saying yes to those opportunities. So it was an aspiration for her to have a charity, but she didn't even think at the time that she was going to have one of these big tables with all these people around, she was going to have to chair a meeting. So that
that's a big skill in itself. Well, in fact, they all are, but you wouldn't have thought her life journey was going to take that route.
No, not at all. And then something else that resonated, because we have to think of all audience, don't we? With Anna Williamson, one, my children couldn't even believe that I was interviewing her in the first instance, and she said hello to them. So that was a win-win situation for me. But the honesty around mental health and how she supported her own mental health. And she was so open of what happened to her and the learnings from having a nervous breakdown and how that made her fitter, stronger to accomplish all the things that she has done since then. So that was another really lovely moment for me. And something that I was really quite empowered around was when we did the podcast with Liz Earle, and she talks about midlife, she talks about supplements, she talks about how to look after your body. And her audience really is mainly female. But one of our male members of staff came up to me and actually listened to that podcast. And he said to me that he took advice from some of the things that she said, and he used that advice and how it made him feel so much better. So the learning behind that is, don't ever box anything, because if one person can take one tip to make their health or their life or their learning better, then that's great for me.
And one of her key words was sleep. Yes. I remember her saying, never underestimate the value of sleep.
Yes, yes.
Which is, I guess, the beauty of all this is that if your guests are willing to share, others will learn from it.
Yeah. And then just recently, our last podcast with David Lockwood, you know, the CEO for Babcock, and he started talking about the support from his wife and how he felt about his own mental health and health. And I wasn't expecting that. And that was just a privilege to be able to open somebody up and for them to share such personal knowledge.
So do you quote your guests when you do your own presentations?
Of course I do. I think most things aren't brand new. Why reinvent the wheel when you can learn things from other people? And I have learned so much. Doing the podcast really has been learning for me in lots of ways. One, that I have to concentrate even more and listen, because if there's a set of questions and the person that you're talking to has already answered the question, you can't just go down a list of questions, because you'd look a bit silly if you were asking a question that they'd already answered. So the concentration of listening and then preparing in your head for the next question is really, really difficult, really difficult.
Yeah.
So there is an absolute knack of being a podcast presenter.
Yeah.
There really, really is. But also, when I was turned into being in the opposite chair today, I woke up this morning thinking, whoa, this is different. And actually, I've been getting used to the other way.
Yeah.
And when the focus is on me,
Absolutely. It's
totally different.
And this is it, yeah, because you probably last night were in bed thinking, oh, what do I say tomorrow if I get asked this question, that question? Because it's nerve-wracking on both sides. You mentioned about the skill of listening when you're a host, because you have to occasionally come up with questions on the fly and think, there's an interesting avenue, we need to explore that a bit more. There are other skills, such as having confidence and interpersonal skills. Do they come into the banner soft skills? I guess they do, don't they? Are they valued as equally, do you think, as the traditional hard skills? For listeners who perhaps don't know what hard skills are, could you summarise what they involve and how the two sit together?
Yeah, and not the brilliant use of language. Absolutely not. So I am uncomfortable with the use of language, but that's what people resonate with. So hard skills are the hard facts of getting where you need to get to. So in education, it would be the career that you're aspiring to and what qualifications and what do you have to do to complete that qualification to get where you need to get to next. So that's what I class as hard skills in a nutshell. I mean, it is broader than that. And then the soft skills are all around the teamwork, the confidence, the empowerment, the resilience. And actually, going full circle, Paul, and what I mentioned earlier about everything is about people. If you haven't got people, you have nothing. So if you haven't got people and you haven't got healthy people, you can't do the hard skills. Or going back to what you were saying about AI and digital technology, if you haven't got the people and the right people with the right skills in the right place with the right empowerment, then that second bit isn't going to work. So they are absolutely equally important, but probably more important. Mm-hmm. And I think with COVID and with digitization, those skills can get lost. And I remember in the olden days when we still had a telephone at home, that if the phone rang, that my children wouldn't answer it. Or if the doorbell rang, they didn't want to answer it. And that's probably, they were getting used to not having so much interaction and face-to-face interaction with people. But getting around a table, looking at somebody in the eye and working together and empowering people or creating a belonging with people or instilling confidence in people is of the utmost importance, because then people are better at what they do at the end of it.
Absolutely. You mentioned earlier that you wanted to be a Blue Peter presenter. I'm going to say that. In a small way, has this allowed you to achieve that aim as that little personal goal?
I am privileged. I wouldn't change my life for the absolute world, because I always think of that, what do you want to be when you grow up? Mine was a Blue Peter presenter, and then I wanted to be a makeup artist for the BBC, which at the age of 16, I did follow that avenue, and then everything just changed and turned. And I think that's another valid point. It's fine. Keep things fluid. And if there's an opportunity, take it. So I went to college to learn to be a makeup artist. But then quite soon after that, I went into teaching at a very early age. And lifelong learning.
Teaching secondary education, primary school?
Yeah,
what kind of teaching?
Further education.
Yeah,
16. Well, actually, it was 16 plus. I was saying this to somebody yesterday. My first cohort of students were mature students. And I was brought up to respect my elders. And that was really, really quite difficult
for me.
So you
were teaching people that were older than you.
Yeah, and I always remember being in the front of a classroom teaching mature students, and it was embedded in me to respect my elders. And I was thinking, what am I doing here? There are people in my class who were the same age as my parents.
Yeah.
So again, that was learning on the job and learning as I was going along, which I'm grateful for now. Then I went into teaching. But in terms of the lifelong learning, when I was in education, then I learned complementary health and sports therapy and nutrition. So I've always been learning and adding qualifications to my bow to make me the person that I am now.
When you were in that role then with those older people, did you get imposter syndrome? I get that all the time. Do you get that? Are you confident enough now that you don't suffer from that?
I'm not really keen on the word imposter syndrome. And again, this is the disruptor in
me. Yeah, yeah.
So it's quite a buzzword and people use it
always,
all the time.
Always, yes.
But the definition of it happens to most people. Mm-hmm. But in that particular cohort, when they didn't do their homework or when things weren't actually going the way it should have been, to actually be in my position was quite a challenge and quite difficult.
Yeah.
As I said, when I was brought up to respect my elders. So there's me with wisdom to share, as in a skill. But if they weren't embracing wanting to do that skill, then that was a challenge.
Tell the wolf for not doing that homework.
Exactly.
You're in detention.
Exactly.
Where? Down the pub? I don't know.
Yeah. So that was a big learning curve for me.
So you say yes when an opportunity comes to you.
Yeah.
Is there an opportunity that you'd like to say yes to that you haven't had yet?
Oh, well, I'm really excited for the future. And I know that there are going to be many opportunities. And as long as I'm giving service, then those opportunities will be accomplished.
You're terribly positive about things, aren't you? All right, then I'm going to ask a similar sort of question, but the other way around. And this is a question that many chat show presenters use. So it's not one I've thought of. By, if you had the opportunity to speak to 5-year-old Jackie Grubb, what advice would you give her now?
To be authentic, to believe in yourself, and do what your heart is telling you.
That's very good. I want to close by talking about Skillfully Speaking Series 2.
Yes.
Which is very exciting. We've got our little bits of paper here to remind us what is coming up. Wow, it's actually quite a good list. Go on,
give us some teasers. It certainly is. And we've got Beth Mead, who is a footballer. And she plays for Arsenal and England. Mm-hmm. So she's going to be a huge role model for our listeners. So we've got Beth Mead. We've also got Rob Rinder, the barrister, the TV personality, better known as Judge Rinder.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of talking about skills in its widest forms, is you've got very different guests. Yeah. Who else?
We've got Mark Foster, the swimmer. And again, I've read a lot about him and he's got an amazing story personally, but at the same time, in his competitive world, he's got a really good story there. And even where he is today, there's a different story of advice and skills for later life. So really, really excited about that. And on the AI and digital theme, we've got somebody called Robin Gurnabum, who is the managing director for JISC, which is the UK's digital data and technology agency. And he will be focusing on education, research and innovation. Mm-hmm. So again, taking it
nice
to a different angle.
There, yes.
So a techie one.
So that is quite a good overarching range of guests and topics. Jackie Grubb, presenter of Skillfully Speaking, skills ambassador and... All right, you're okay, aren't you? Overall, lovely person. Thank you very much for being my guest here on the closing episode for Series 1 of Skillfully Speaking. You've been an absolute delight.
Thank you, Paul.
You're welcome.
And thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my story.
No problem whatsoever. But the biggest thank you has to go to our listeners who have given us some amazing feedback on Skillfully Speaking and shared with us what they've managed to learn from Skillfully Speaking and also what they want to hear in the future. If you would like to share it, please do amongst all your friends and colleagues, because there's a lot to learn throughout Series 1 and more to learn in Series 2. Don't forget to subscribe or follow. And also, when you go to a dinner party, you can even ask Alexa to play Skillfully Speaking podcast. Now, give it a go, why don't you? This has been Skillfully Speaking. Thank you very much for listening.
Skillfully Speaking is supported by Babcock International. Visit babcockinternational.com. Presented by Jackie Grubb. Produced by Paul Philpott. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess-Moon. Video content by Mark Stevenson. Coordinated by Louise Greenleaf. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Copyright City College Plymouth. All rights reserved.